It's a pleasure to be back. It's a pleasure to be seated as we normally sit, especially for the guy in the middle who doesn't have to look around others. So, first case this morning is United States v. Willman. Appellant ready to argue?
Yes, Your Honor.
Government?
Yes, Your Honor.
Thank you. Appellant may argue.
Good morning. Chief Judge Stuckey, members of the court, and may it please the court. I am Major Megan Hoffman, and together with Mr. Mark Brueger, I represent the appellant in this case, Staff Sergeant Kayla Willman. Your Honor, I'd like to reserve 3 minutes of time for rebuttal.
Granted.
The Air Force Court attached Staff Sergeant Willman's declaration to the record for a proper purpose, which was to consider his cruel and unusual punishment claims. Once attached, that declaration became part of the entire record. And because it became part of the entire record, the Air Force Court was then obligated to consider that declaration for Article 66 sentence appropriateness, and it did not. The Air Force Court should have considered it and could have considered it for any purpose, including whether Staff Sergeant Willman's confinement conditions rendered his sentence inappropriately severe. But it erred when it found that it could not consider that declaration properly attached to the record for Article 55 and Eighth Amendment cruel and unusual punishment claims to determine the appropriateness of the sentence. In United States v. Jesse, this court carved out an exception to the general rule.
Well, isn't sentence appropriateness kind of a black hole in that it's this power which we've described in, you know, enormous terms, but when they do it, does anyone really know what they're looking at? And in other words, are we talking about anything substantive here, or what are we doing here?
Well, Your Honor,
my question is halfway clear.
Yes, Your Honor, I think it is, and you can tell me if I'm not answering it, but I believe that the Article 66C gives courts very broad, plenary, de novo discretion. So to the extent that there are limits on sentence appropriateness, that's what they are. But Your Honor, yes, I would say that they are extraordinarily broad.
Well, I was saying more than that. They're extraordinarily broad, and how do we even know what they're looking at when they exercise the power? Because usually, if they find it inappropriate, they simply say, it's inappropriate because... Blah, 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 blah. But they don't say what they looked at, necessarily. It may be clear. But that's what I'm really asking.
Yes, Your Honor, and I honestly think that that is a case-by-case comparison. So sometimes courts do say, yes, this is what we've considered, and this is why the sentence is inappropriate. But more often they say we've considered the entire circumstances of this case, and we find the sentence to be appropriate. So I think what you may be getting at is that more often when the court finds a sentence to be inappropriate, you would much more know what they're looking at. Does that answer your question, Your Honor?
Yeah.
Can I ask for a clarification? In your briefs, and I think it's well captured by your index page, at one point you refer to the ability of the CCA with the requirement to consider the addition as being, quote, part of the entire record.
Yes, Your Honor.
But then in your second point, you say you refer to considering outside the record matters. Could you please talk about the distinction you're drawing there?
Yes, Your Honor. So I would say that I will bring it back to this case, but matters that were initially outside of the record of trial, so not contained in the initial record of trial, up to the point of the entry of the sentence, and you know, or before clemency, is distinct from materials that can then be attached to the record and which then became part of the entire record. So when the brief refers, perhaps inartfully, to outside the record matters, what it's referring to is the after-attached declaration of Staff Sergeant Willman and the government confinement official in this case. Does that answer your question, Your Honor?
Thank you.
United States v. Jesse, this court made an exception to the rule that CCAs can't consider materials outside the record in the review under Article 66C with one very big caveat, which is that when those allegations include Article 55 and Eighth Amendment claims, they can be attached. And that's what happened here. Staff Sergeant Willman raised cruel and unusual punishment claims in his assignment of errors, and he moved to attach a declaration about those. And the Air Force granted that motion. It also granted the government's motion to attach the declaration of a confinement official who was involved in his medical treatment. And the Air Force Court considered both of these declarations and relied on them to assess Staff Sergeant Willman's cruel and unusual punishment claims. But then it decided they couldn't consider them for his Article 66C claims because they were not part of the entire record of the case. And that is logically and legally inconsistent, because when the court granted the motion to attach those declarations, they became part of the entire record.
So if we were to take your approach, would we not be providing a tremendous incentive for appellants to flout the majority's holding in Jesse, where every time when they're really looking for a sentence appropriateness determination, they would also wave the red flag saying, well, this is Article 55, Eighth Amendment issue as well. So that they would be driving a truck through the majority's opinion.
No, Your Honor, we don't believe that they would. And that's because the service courts already have mechanisms to be the gatekeepers for these types of claims. Every service court has a version of the joint rules, Rule 23, B. The Air Force Courts in particular requires a showing of relevance and why it's appropriate for the service court to attach the record. So if appellants are attempting to flout the confines of Jesse, the service courts have a way to, for lack of a better term, be the goalie and to reject those sort of red herrings or Trojan horses.
But how would they do that? I mean, if there is something that is raised to the attention of the CCA along the lines of allegations of Article 55 and Eighth Amendment.
Yes, Your Honor.
Wouldn't the CCA then need to say, well, we need to look at an affidavit or something along those lines? And once they do so, according to your approach, it becomes part of the record. And once it becomes part of the record, it's mandated that the CCA consider it for the sentence appropriateness review. So when you're talking about the CCA judges being the goalkeeper here, how would that work in the real world?
Well, Your Honor, first of all, I agree with what you just said, and I agree with your summation of our position, which is that once an appellant raises a colorable, maybe we could say even a prima facie, Eighth Amendment or Article 55 claim, and the CCA properly attaches to the record a declaration about that, then the CCA does indeed have to consider those claims for sentence appropriateness. And so to the extent that an appellant actually raises that claim, yes, the CCA would have to consider it. But in the event that the CCA decides that these are not in fact, you know, Article 55 or Eighth Amendment violations, or there's not even a colorable claim here, there's not a prima facie case, the CCA can go back and do what it did in Jesse, which is to go back and post hoc deny the motion to attach. And that's precisely what happened. Another option is the government could file a writ on this matter. So which is to say that if the CCA I won't say mistakenly, but later reconsiders its judgment in granting a motion to attach, there are mechanisms to undo that.
Counsel, may I ask a question?
Yes, sir.
One of the concerns in Jesse was trying to reconcile the language of Article 66 with existing precedents. And the conclusion that was drawn by the majority opinion was that, well, the court can only consider materials that are part of the entire record, except we have these precedents that considered Article 55 Eighth Amendment claims. And there was no need to question those in that case or to overrule them. My question is this: are there any precedents that, if we ruled against you, we'd be violating? Is there any case in which we have previously said that a court may consider matters that were not part of the record for sentence appropriateness that didn't involve Article 55 or the Eighth Amendment?
Your Honor, I'm not sure that there are cases that involve, well, that's not true. Let me back up. So I think that the one case that I would point to is United States v. Gay, which I realize that case involved an allegation that was in the record, which the court then felt the need to supplement. But that case did not involve, that was a case that where the court found that it could consider materials outside the record, and it wasn't Eighth Amendment and Article 55 claims. So I don't know if I've answered your question, Your Honor.
Thank you.
Counsel, if we think you're asking us to extend our previous holdings to what is a new situation, a novel situation, what really then is the relevance of your appellant's toe injury to the appropriateness of the sentence as approved by the convening authority? I mean, these are things that happened post-trial, in confinement. All kinds of things can happen. It's just fortuitous that it happened before his CCH hearing instead of after. What's the relevance?
Yes, Your Honor.
What is the policy decision or policy argument you would make to convince us that we should extend our precedent?
Well, Your Honor, I mean, I think there are excellent policy arguments in favor of this, but, to include the fact that appellants like Staff Sergeant Willman don't have another place for their claims, declaratory judgments wouldn't necessarily help him or wouldn't help him at all, and he certainly can't get relief under the Federal Tort Claims Act because of the Ferries Bar. However, this Court has said before that policy arguments are not going to drive its decision, and we don't think that they have to. And that's because, at base, the problem here is that Staff Sergeant Willman did not receive the full plenary Article 66, the de novo review that he was entitled to. And so all we're asking is for this Court to remand this case back to the Air Force Court for it to consider that the full implications of the declarations in his case. And that's the problem, is that the Air Force Court...
But again, you're depending on the happy accident that he had an Eighth Amendment claim. What if he hadn't had an Eighth Amendment claim and the same things had happened? There'd be no jurisdiction. Does the whole jurisdiction turn on whether or not he files an Eighth Amendment or Article 55 claim?
Yes, Your Honor. Yes, Your Honor.
Is that a sensible way to determine whether or not someone who has, this kind of issue in post-trial confinement can bring a claim before the CCAs?
Your Honor, I can't say. I mean, I certainly think that this Court's decision to carve out an exception to Jesse to allow appellants to bring the conditions of their confinement in front of this Court, I certainly agree with that. With that reasoning, because these claims often have no other home.
Well, but we were very careful in Jesse to cabin it.
Yes, Your Honor, certainly.
Go ahead with Judge Hardy's question.
Yes, Your Honor, thank you. So we certainly agree with that. Your Honor, which is that it's important to put these claims in front of, it's important for these claims to have a place in front of this court. So to answer your question about whether that's a sensible way to conduct business, yes, we think it is. A second point, Your Honors, it is legally and logically inconsistent for service courts to consider materials attached to the record for cruel and unusual punishment purposes, but not for sentence appropriateness. And so what this court, or what the Air Force Court did below in this case, was to say, we are attaching these outside the record materials, or to the record. And in our view, they became part of the record. And it's hard to see how logically they could be otherwise. But then the court, having considered them for the Article 55 and Eighth Amendment claims, refused to consider them under Article 66C for sentence appropriateness. And that is,
they refused because we told them they couldn't.
Well, Your Honor, I certainly don't want to argue with you about the holding of Jesse, but I believe that our interpretation of Jesse is that they could. Because once Staff Sergeant Willman raised those Article 55 and Eighth Amendment claims, and those materials became properly attached to the record, they became part of the record. And Article 66C says that the CCAs have to consider the entire record for sentence appropriateness. So it is a logical inconsistency for them to say otherwise. And that is the view, that was the view of Judge McGinley in the case below in his dissent. That was the view of Chief Judge Johnson of the Air Force and United States v. Matthews in his concurrence. And that is also the incongruity that multiple courts have found. And even Judge Olson in U.S. v. Jesse remarked that it was odd that this court would have the authority to supplement the record, but that a service court would not. I see my time has expired. Pending any further questions?
I'll ask a question when you come back on rebuttal.
Thank you, Your Honor.
Thank you, counsel. Counsel for the government.
Chief Judge Stuckey, judges of the court, may it please the court. My name is Captain Cortland Bobchinsky, and I, along with my co-counsel, Ms. Mary Ellen Payne, represent the United States government. The appellant failed to avail himself of any and all opportunities to seek relief, and now he's asking this court to expand the scope of review of the courts of criminal appeals to review his claim, even though in doing so, it would contradict the plain language of Article 66C, as well as this court's precedent in United States versus Jesse. The Air Force Court of Criminal Appeals properly refused to consider the appellant's post-trial submission as a part of its sentencing review under Article 66C for three reasons. First, this court's holding in United States versus Jesse, along with the plain language of Article 66C, clearly preclude the courts of criminal appeals from considering matters outside the record when reviewing a sentence under Article 66C. Second, the appellant's affidavit never became part of the record, even though it easily could have been. And third, policy considerations support the plain language reading of Article 66C in that the courts of criminal appeals are not the appropriate forum for the appellant's post-trial confinement claim in that it cannot fashion an appropriate form of remedy.
Counsel, could I focus on point number two?
Yes, sir.
So, appellant's counsel says it is a logical progression that if a CCA attaches something to the record, it becomes part of the record. And then the statute says that it's required for CCA to consider the entire record when considering sentence appropriateness. Where is the defense wrong, the appellant wrong on that?
Your Honor, it's wrong because Congress clearly included restrictive language within Article 66C, which limits the scope of review by the courts of criminal appeals. And as this court noted in United States v. Jesse, or rather held in United States v. Jesse, that scope of review is limited to the entire record. And it becomes a part of the entire record, or at least is defined as the entire record, at the time in which the convening authority approves the sentence.
I'm sorry to bust in, but could you speak louder, counsel?
Yes, Your Honor.
So what is an attachment then?
Your Honor, as this court noted in held in United States v. Jesse, there is a second category of precedent in which the courts of criminal appeals can supplement the record if it's raised by the record but not necessarily resolvable by the record. And in those cases, the courts of criminal appeals can supplement the record and attach it and review it for that purpose. In fact, as this court noted in United States v. Jesse in a footnote, not everything that becomes attached to the record can be reviewed for any purpose.
Okay, but I'm asking something different. What is an attachment to the record if not part of the record? What is that entity?
Your Honor, it is an attachment to the record, but that's different than...
Can you point to any case law that says an attachment to the record is not part of the record? Can you point to any rules or anything like that?
Your Honor, all I can do is point to what this court stated in United States v. Jesse, where it defined what constitutes the entire record for purposes of reviewing the sentence under Article 66C. I think there's two distinctions between attaching something to the record for one purpose and then being able to review it under the entire record as defined by this court in United States v. Jesse.
Yeah, I guess I'm a little confused as well, and I was going to ask this question of appellate defense counsel on rebuttal, but since you're here, he'll be the target, I guess. But like Judge Olson, I'm kind of confused. There's a record, and then there's a record. There's a record of trial. There's the appellate record, and then there's a record that stuff is attached to but not considered. I'm asking the question genuinely because I'm kind of confused about this, and I admit to being confused.
Yes, Your Honor. This court defined, kind of made that distinction in United States v. Jesse, where it made the distinction of when the courts of criminal appeals could supplement the record and then what actually constitutes the record under Article 66C for purposes of reviewing a sentence under Article 66C. And this court made it clear that what constitutes the entire record is limited to the record of trial, the matters attached to the record, and then briefs and arguments that the counsel might present regarding the matters attached to the record and the record of trial. And then looking at that first sentence within Article 66C, as this court noted, the entire record then is determined at the time in which the convening authority approves the sentence. That defines the scope of the record when reviewing a sentence under Article 66C. This court made that even more clear when it analyzed the facts in United States v. Gay. And in that case, the reason the courts of criminal appeals could review his claim, or his post-trial confinement claim, was because it had become attached to the record prior to the convening authority taking or approving the sentence. In fact, as this court footnoted, his 1105 submission became a matter attached to the record, and the convening authority's action became a part of the record of trial. And it was for that reason that the Court of Criminal Appeals could then review it under its scope of review under Article 66C.
So when this court asks a CCA for the record, we have to say, we want you to send us the record plus any supplements to the record. Otherwise, we would not be presented with those supplements, based on your argument, that supplements to the record are somehow distinct from the record. It's not part of the record.
Your Honor, it's distinct in the fact that it's a limitation in the scope of review. So to the extent that it becomes the record to be reviewed for certain matters, for example...
Okay, but haven't you just hit upon the whole point here? You just said when it becomes part of the record for certain matters, what flows from that is the wording of the statute that obligates the CCA to consider the entire record. It can't be that Jesse overturned the language of that statute. So once you say it becomes part of the record, the CCA is required to consider it for the sentence appropriateness issue.
No, Your Honor. This court made it clear that the language of Article 66C does not allow the courts of criminal appeals to review anything outside of the record, which is defined at the point in which the convening authority takes or approves the sentence. And as this court stated, Congress made it very clear that the courts of criminal appeals can only review that which is included in the record when reviewing appropriateness for a sentence. And as this court reiterated in United States versus Jesse, if the courts of criminal appeals review authority is limitless, then much of the restrictive wording within Article 66C would be rendered superfluous. So if anything could be attached to the record for one purpose and then be reviewed for any purpose, then this court's holding in United States versus Jesse means nothing. The language of Article 66C
means
nothing.
It doesn't mean that Jesse has been overruled or overturned. What it would mean is simply that this is a natural consequence of the Jesse holding.
But I think the logical then conclusion would be that if an appellant merely makes an Eighth Amendment or Article 55 claim to have their sentence reviewed under Article 66C, then anything can be reviewed as long as they attach it to the record long after the convening authority has taken action on their sentence.
Well, it has to be a situation where the CCA has determined to attach it to the record. It's not an appellant's ability to unilaterally do that, correct?
Yes, Your Honor, but Congress has limited the scope of review for the courts of criminal appeals. They've not given them the discretionary ability to determine their own scope of review. And as this court stated in United States versus Jesse, that scope of review was clearly delineated by Congress when it drafted Article 66C. And so the courts of...
Correct, that a CCA has to consider the entire record.
Your Honor, but the language within Article 66C specifically says that the courts of criminal appeals may only act with respect to the findings and sentence as approved by the convening authority. If they could review anything beyond that, then that renders that first sentence meaningless.
Counsel, can the CCAs decide an Eighth Amendment claim, the Article 55 claim, without appending whatever materials are submitted relevant to that claim to the record? Do they have any mechanism for deciding things that aren't in the record and then saying, we looked at this, we read it, we considered it, but we're not going to add it to the record because we don't think it's a meritorious stand? Or to consider it, does it have to be part of the record?
Your Honor, as far as Eighth Amendment and Article 55
yes,
claims are concerned, well, this court did not disturb the Eighth Amendment or Article 55 claim review, so the Court of Criminal Appeals would be able to supplement the record for those claims, but that does not extend to reviewing a sentence under Article 66C because the scope
Right. I'm just saying, is there any mechanism that your colleague suggested that there might be a requirement that they make a prima facie case for an Eighth Amendment claim, and then it would be appended to the record. Is there any mechanism for doing that, or if they're going to consider the claim, does it have to be part of the record?
Yes, Your Honor. But also in looking at Eighth Amendment and Article 55 claims, as this court noted, I believe in United States versus Avila, that they have to exhaust administrative remedies and they have to file an Article 138 complaint. And the logic behind that is to create in and of itself a record that the Court of Criminal Appeals could easily then resolve the complaint. In this case, that certainly wasn't the case. They took no steps to procedurally avail themselves to any and all redress or forms of relief. And they certainly could not make a successful Eighth Amendment or Article 55 claim, at least when it comes to that third Lovett factor.
And also, if we ruled that there was no jurisdiction here to consider these claims outside of the Eighth Amendment Article 55 claims, would someone who's in post-trial confinement and suffers a harm, some legitimate harm, what recourse would they have?
Your Honor, as the Supreme Court stated in Lewis versus Casey as well as Bell versus Wolfish, it cautioned even Article III courts from not getting overly involved in the prison administration operations. And the logic behind that is because they have the best form of fashioning an appropriate form of relief for these types of post-trial confinement claims. And at least in this case, the appellant had an opportunity to avail himself of several different forms of relief and remedy at the administrative level, but he failed to do so. And then even further from that, he certainly has an opportunity to seek relief from an Article III court, but the Court of Criminal Appeals does not have that much power to fashion appropriate forms of relief for these types of cases, especially when those conditions are not connected to the adjudged or the approved sentence as approved by the convening authority. Additionally, the courts of criminal appeals are not courts of equity, and they are narrowly circumscribed, and their ability to fashion appropriate remedy comes straight from Article 66C as well, which is that they can only act with respect to the findings and sentence as approved by the convening authority. They can only reduce a sentence. And essentially here, the appellant is asking the Court of Criminal Appeals to reduce his sentence that he was adjudged for unlawfully recording the private area of a 16-year-old girl. And that's not appropriate. That's not an appropriate form of relief here. But furthermore, in going to my first point, the courts of criminal appeals, they have limited jurisdiction, possessing only powers that have been granted to them by Congress. And that comes straight from the language of Article 66C, which maintains restrictive language that limits that scope of review.
Counsel, can I ask you about that? In Jesse, we decided not to disturb cases which had allowed courts to consider matters outside the entire record if those claims were for Eighth Amendment or Article 55. And I think we specifically referred to it as matters outside the record, and we said those may be considered. Were those cases incorrectly decided, those cases that had allowed Article 55 and Eighth Amendment claims to be considered when there was nothing in the record to base those claims on? Were those cases incorrectly decided?
Based on the plain language of Article 66C, there doesn't seem to be an exception that allows for anything to be reviewed outside of the record when it comes to what's attached to the record at the time that the convening authority took or approved the sentence. So based on the plain language of Article 66C, it doesn't look like Congress did provide an exception or expanded the scope of review for those claims as well.
So your answer to Judge Meg's question is that we wrongly decided?
Your Honor, this court in United States versus Jesse.
You can say, yeah, we're wrong. You think we were wrong?
Your Honor, I think that this court got it right in United States versus Jesse when it said that it could revisit the issue because it doesn't fall in line with the language of Article 66C, and that it, at any point in the future, it could either eliminate it as an exception altogether or leave it as an aberration. But in looking at the strict language of Article 66C, I don't think Congress expanded the scope of review that broadly.
Counsel, let's say that we agree with you. What about the criticism, though, that this is just weird, that the courts of CCAs could look at matters outside the record for the purpose of Article 55 and the Eighth Amendment, but could not look at it for the purpose of sentence appropriateness, that several judges below had noted that this seems inconsistent? What is your answer to that inconsistency? And in particular, is the answer that having an exception where courts can consider matters outside the records for some purposes but not others is just unworkable? And then maybe the exception shouldn't exist at all?
Yes, Your Honor. I think that Congress answered this question and limited the scope of review. And as I already stated, my position on Eighth Amendment and Article 55 claims, I think that Congress answered this question and that this court rightfully interpreted that language, that specifically that restrictive language, that there is a limitation in the scope of review. And so regardless of whether or not it seems right or wrong, Congress is the one that gets to decide, and Congress did decide. And if Congress intends to expand the scope later down the road, as this court stated in Jesse, the President and Congress can certainly revise Article 66C if it should choose to do so. But the job of this court, as it noted in United States versus Spicer, is to interpret the statute as far as the meaning of the words fairly permit. And I think that this court rightfully interpreted that restrictive language within Article 66C, which does denote that Congress intended to limit that scope of review.
Okay, but I'm not sure you've answered Judge Maggs's question. I understand the reason why you're focusing on what you believe to be Congress's limitation on the scope of the CCAs. And I think all of us would predict that this court will visit that issue in the future. But the government didn't certify an issue on that point, seeking to have us overrule all those points now. And I think that's a very important point. Judge Maggs's point was kind of a commonsensical point. How would we say to the world, yes, the CCA would consider it this part of the record, or however you want to describe it, for this limited area, but then another issue that is cheek by jowl with that issue, we're not going to consider it. I believe the word that Judge Maggs used is weird. Why would that not be weird to make that distinction? And the second question that flows from that is this really a big deal in terms of if this court were to say, yes, you have to consider it because it's this logical progression as portrayed by appellant's counsel. Attachment is part of the record. It's then required that the entire record be considered. If a CCA is already engaged in the Article 55 Eighth Amendment analysis, and one sentence in an opinion could resolve the issue about sentence appropriateness, how much of a burden is this really in the real world? So the first thing is, please address the weirdness issue, and secondly, the burden issue.
Your Honor, I think that Congress limited the scope of review.
Now remember, I said please answer this without going back to the Article 66 issue in terms of your plain language. We understand your point. Your point is a valid point. But like I said, government didn't certify that issue. I'm asking you to set that aside as you respond to the question.
Yes, Your Honor. I see my time is
about to expire. Please answer his questions.
Yes, Your Honor. To the extent that it may seem incongruent, this court did decide in United States versus Jesse to cabin the Article 55 and Eighth Amendment claim review. And, Your Honor, as you stated in United States versus Blanks, the doctrine of stare decisis applies, and it's even more compelling when it's based on statutory construction. And this court certainly did that in United States versus Jesse. It interpreted the language of Article 66C. So to that extent, I think this court addressed this in United States versus Jesse, so I would defer to that ruling. And, Your Honor, to the second point, if you could refresh my memory.
How much of a burden really is this on a CCA? Once you've already engaged in the analysis for Article 55 and Eighth Amendment purposes, and in light of the fact that one sentence in the CCA opinion could dispose of this matter, how much of a burden really is it?
Yes, Your Honor. I think as what was pointed out earlier, that it would incentivize appellants to merely make an Eighth Amendment or Article 55 claim just so their sentence could be reviewed under Article 66C, think that this opens the floodgates because then the scope of review no longer exists. And if they only have to make that claim just to be reviewed under a lesser standard, I think that appellants will be incentivized to delay appeal and to not take appropriate action at the time in which they're claiming that they receive these post-trial confinement conditions that render their sentence so severe.
Can I ask one question?
John.
I know you're beyond your time, and I apologize to the court. But isn't the problem, the reason why you're having difficulty possibly in discussing this weirdness, so to speak, that both Judge Maggs and Judge Olson have brought up is that you touched on it. It's stare decisis. We kind of created this weirdness. I know you don't want to say that because you're a respectful person. I know that. But is that possibly, I mean, the reason why we're kind of, from your point of view, that your argument is stuck because we've already made this carve out. And your whole position is that Article 66 doesn't allow you to make these kinds of carve outs. And if you were queen of the world, you wouldn't have done it this way. Is that possible?
Your Honor, it's certainly possible.
That's all I have.
Thank you, counsel.
Thank you, Your Honor.
The appellant have rebuttal.
Yes, Your Honor. Thank you. Your Honor, if I may, just a few quick points of clarification. Your Honor, Judge Olson, you had made the point that once a CCA attaches something to the record, that potentially we're just driving a truck through the exception. And I just wanted to address that. The CCA does not have to attach something to the record to assess its relevance. So, and I wasn't clear about that. There's the screening function that's available, you know, for a CCA to determine the relevance of the proposed attachment, and then to either reject it or to accept it based on that on that relevance, that proffer.
Isn't that the whole reason for requiring the defense counsel to file a motion to request attachment?
Your Honor, yes, I believe it is.
Yeah, so they could request the attachment, but the court could say no, based on some of the points that the government counsel has raised, no, we're not going to attach it.
Exactly so, Your Honor, and that's exactly what the service court did in U.S. v. Jesse. They did it post hoc, but they still did it. They went back and denied the motion to attach. Judge Hardy, to your point regarding the policy arguments, we certainly agree with the dissents in Jesse, as well as the policy arguments made by Judge McGinley in the case below, but to the extent that this court is unwilling to overturn Jesse.
On that point, why would we overturn Jesse as opposed to overturn the cases that are inconsistent with the language of Article 66C? I mean, if there's an inconsistency, we could resolve it by expanding the erroneous views of those previous cases, or we could correct the inconsistency by overruling those previous cases. Why would expanding those cases be the appropriate measure?
Well, 2 points, Your Honor. One is that the reason that this court decided to carve out the exception for Article 55 and Eighth Amendment claims was stare decisis, which is to say that appellants like Staff Sergeant Willman relied very reasonably on this court's earlier precedent to vindicate those particular claims. And I think Schlesinger v. Councilman, the Supreme Court said specifically that it expects military courts to vindicate military claims. And so if I understand this court's ruling in Jesse, that it was an important right. So not only stare decisis, but also the nature of Article 55 and Eighth Amendment claims, which this court felt was important to protect specifically, and in order to allow attachments to the record. Your Honors, I see my time has run. Pending any further questions. Thank you very much.
Thank you, counsel. Court thanks counsel for both sides. Case is now submitted. Court is in recess until 10:45.